Thank you, everyone. I hope you all enjoyed the discussions. So for the wrap-up, we'll now call Brother Ian.
Brother Ethan. Wow, that was they were quite the sessions today, right? It was very practical, again, a lot of practical discussions, really trying to apply it. Which section do you spend most time in? Caleb, what's your group? Rebuke. Oh, okay, that's interesting. What about some of the other groups? Did you spend a lot of time in that section as well, or really? Wow. Okay, that's interesting. Our group, we kind of got into the care for the widows and stuff like that. We spent a fair bit of time in that section. Okay, so that's good. So who would like to share some of the learnings that you got? Just a main point.
Your conscience, once it's seared, it would be hard to get it back. And the only thing you can do is get pulled right out of there by someone else. Much like how Lot was trying to stop me and pulled right out of the sign.
Right. That's great. Everybody hear that? With the conscience being seared? How can we sear our conscience? Did you talk about that? How our conscience gets seared? Did you talk about that? Good. What did you come up with?
It starts out just small, like walk again. First he went to the valley and it looked nice, and then he faced the tent towards Sodom, and then he went close to Sodom, and then pretty soon there in Sodom, and he just with all the rest of the elders, just like the first time he did.
Right. Yeah. Excellent.
So you see it as a gradual thing. Yep. Good. I mean, what are some of the incredible technologies today that sear our conscience?
Sorry?
The World Wide Web. The Wild Wild West. Right. Yep. The Wild Wild West. Games, video games, movies, music, and over time they sear the conscience. One of the things that, you know, you look at the searing of the conscience, it's kind of it's a scary thing. Because if the conscience gets really seared, it's hard to come back from that. So that's a real warning to us. If we get that conscience seared so badly, pretty soon it has no effect on us at all. I think it's a real warning if we start going down that way. It's a really scary thing for our characters. All right, anybody else got anything else they want to share from the learnings? How about how it's going to affect your walk in the truth from what you learned today? Is there any particular thing that you covered in your class that you say, you know what? That's really going to change the way I treat people or conduct my life. Anything like that come out?
Yep, Josh?
Just with the conscience thing of how all the type of walking the truth of, just think, I guess a key thing to make sure we don't get that seared conscience is a self-examination. So, you know, very often at the end of each day or just continually always examining ourselves, our reactions to certain things in the world or whatever, examining that against God's principles, so that we make sure that we are continually, even if we're hit by it every day, that's a certain thing, that we continually deal with that with the word and examine ourselves with how we are responding, so that over the weeks it doesn't become something that we're seeing.
Yeah, good.
So we fight our conscience the other way. We develop our conscience the other way for the scriptures. Yeah, no, it's very good. All right, anybody else want to share one thing before we move on to the next section? Anything else?
Rachel,
you want to share something? No? So in the particular section about the care for the widows, did you look into where Paul is really getting the background for that, why he's covering that? Did you look at the motivation for where he is in that particular section? Well, one of the things is just a couple of cross-references. You want some interesting cross-references for your notes. For example, you have the idea of the ox that treadeth out the corn in verse 18 of chapter 5. So we read, "For the scripture saith, thou shalt not muzzle the ox that treadeth out the corn, and the laborer is worthy of his hire, his reward." And so into the middle of that section on elders and widows, the Apostle Paul's mind is talking all of a sudden about the ox that treadeth out the corn. As the ox moves around, it's allowed free range to eat the corn for the labor that it's producing. And so in your margin there, where is that taking us back to? Where do you think Paul is looking at? Right, Deuteronomy 25. So I'd write that right in. If you don't have it in a marginal reference, I'd put that in there, and it takes you back to Deuteronomy 25, because what we're finding is the Apostle Paul, in this particular section of Timothy, he is all over the book of Deuteronomy. And so in chapter 25 and at verse 4, we read, "Thou shalt not muzzle the ox when he treadeth out the corn." And then what is the context in which that chapter is taking place? Look at verse 1. If there's a controversy between men and they come into judgment, and you go before the judges, guess what Paul's talking about the elder? Receive not an accusation, but before two or three witnesses. So there's a controversy that's taking place. So Paul's mind is back in the book of Deuteronomy. In fact, if we go back to Deuteronomy 10, and at verse 18, we see this is where the apostle's picking up the idea of care for the widows. We've got verse 18, "He doth execute the judgment of the fatherless and widow, and loveth the stranger in giving him food and raiment. Love ye therefore the stranger, for ye were strangers in the land of Egypt." So Moses is instructing the children of Israel about looking after the widows and the fatherless. And just over to chapter 14 and at verse 29, we see the same thing here. "And the Levite, because he hath no inheritance with thee," that's interesting, "and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow which are within thy gates shall come and shall eat and be satisfied, that the Lord thy God may bless thee in all the work of thine hand which thou doest." And so the Apostle Paul is going to actually be saying to Timothy, you've got to be like a Levite. And we're going to see that come out very clearly tonight, that we must be in the sense of the service of the Lord like a Levite. And so he's taking our minds back to Deuteronomy, and he's saying we need to care for the fatherless and for the widow, for the elder, and so on. And we have to have that respect. So one of the things I just thought I'd finish off this morning, just as a really quick look, is couple of points. I'm sure you've got many others in your groups. Just a couple ones we picked up here is in this particular section that we just went through, respect and care for the elderly in the ecclesia. So we have to have respect and care. The importance of being an example in speech and in our way of life. And it's critical that we do that. And we can't show partiality in making decisions in the truth. I think those are some of the principles that come out of this particular section. One of the things that I wanted to pick up on is verse 12 of chapter 14. Perhaps you spent a bit of time on this one. Verse 12, chapter 14. "Let no man despise thy youth, Timothy, but be thou an example of the believers in word," and that's the idea of speech. That's what it's talking about. It's talking about your speech. "In conversation," that's the idea of your way of life. "In love, in spirit, in faith, in purity." So one of the key things is how you conduct your speech. I'm not talking about whether you enunciate things clearly. It's how you speak is a reflection of your character, and how you deal with people is a reflection of your character. And it really goes to the idea of the power of the tongue, doesn't it? It's the power of the tongue. For example, Proverbs 13, verse 3 says, "He that keepeth his mouth keepeth his life, but he that openeth wide his lips shall have destruction. So keeping our mouth, it's almost like the litmus test of how we're progressing in the truth. A litmus test for how we're progressing in the truth is how we control our speech. So as we progress each day in our studies, we should be more and more cautious with our speech, or our speech should be kinder to one another because we're taking in that word of God. It's affecting us. It's having that impact on us. Now, James, of course, James 3, is we've got three amazing examples about the power of the tongue, which I'm sure we're all very familiar with. And we've got these three examples that James gives us, and I think he spends so much time on it because the tongue is so powerful, and it can get so out of control. And so what Paul is saying to Timothy, Timothy, people are going to watch you, and you've got to be careful in your conversation, in your word, in your speech, in your way of life. And you can kind of see how people are progressing in the truth by their speech. By how they speak, by their fruits you shall know them. How they speak is a reflection of how we're progressing in the truth. So, for example, in James 3, verses 2 and 3, we have this. For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a mature man and is able to bridle the whole body. You control your speech, you've got your body under control. That's what he's saying. For behold, we put bits in the horses' mouths that they may obey us and turn about their whole body. And so he takes this big animal of a horse that can be turned with a bit by just the pulling of the reins. I've never had that really good experience on horses. Horses and I don't get along very good. But just by the pulling of that bit, you can move it. So some of you are maybe more familiar with horses. You know how that works. But James is trying to say this massive animal, this war animal that they used to use as the war horse, can be pulled about with just a little bit in their mouth. So just think about the power of the tongue, that little member in our body, it moves our whole body. So how we're progressing in the truth is reflected in our speech. The second example he gives in James 3, verse 4, is that of the ship. He says, behold also the ships, which though they be so great and are driven of fierce winds, yet they are turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor listeth. So you can see James contemplating these things. A massive horse, a little bit. A massive ship, a little keel. The power in such a small member. And very often, of course, we know that our speech hurts more than a physical wound. As a child, you might forget the spanking you got from your parents, but you might not forget the words that a parent has said. It might stay with you for years. You might have been in a fisticuff, you know, a little bit of a punch-up with somebody, and the hurt's there for a little while, but you remember the words that they spoke, and they remember the words that were said to you. I'm sure that only happened when you're all very young. And then the third example, and I think this one's really relevant to what we're talking about today. He says, for even so the tongue is a little member and boasteth great things. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindleth. And really, when you look in James and what he's going through, he talks about the tongue is a fire, it's a world of iniquity, and so on. It's as if with that little match, you can set on fire a whole forest. With just a little word, you can destroy something that's taken so long to develop and build. It could be a word that you've spoken in a relationship that destroys a relationship that's been years. It could be words that you speak within an ecclesia that destroys an ecclesia that's been going for many years. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindleth. So to really put into practice the lessons we're learning, it should affect our speech, in our word, in our conversation. And I think that's what really Paul is getting across to Timothy. So, to test our progress in the truth, brothers and sisters and young people, James 3, verse 13, we read this. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. He's not saying do something there. Of course, we know we have to do something. James is all about that. But he's actually saying it's by our conversation that we can show our works and our meekness of wisdom. So one of the lessons I'd like us to take away today as we think about some of the things we've talked about, it, let's put it into practice. Let's take those thoughts that we've discussed and let's let it affect our conversation, our speech, and our way of life.